Fasten your seatbelts and turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip.
I've forgotten how it feels with the carpet under my seat. It's the polyester fibers that wrap around my feet. Feels like home. Home.
There's no way to describe exactly what habitat means so much to me, but I will try. If you're a person of faith, you'll learn certain basic lessons about truth, justice, love, and sharing that shape your life. It doesn't matter whether you learn these lessons in a church, as I did, in a synagogue, in a mosque, or at a temple. Wherever the lessons are learned, they remain largely the same. One is that people who have been blessed with wealth should share that wealth with others who are in need. Finding a way to do this, however, can be hard because of the divide that separates the rich and the poor. Those are the words of President Jimmy Carter as a foreword to David Ribble's book, If I Had a Hammer, Building Homes and Hope with Habitat for Humanity. Carter goes on to say, helping a family in need move into a home is the primary mission of Habitat for Humanity. Yet because of the unique way in which Habitat operates, the organization accomplishes much more. It brings together people of different backgrounds and stations in life to create an environment in which people, in which everyone is equal. Today we talk not only about what Habitat for Humanity is and does, but we'll delve into how it fulfills its mission in our region and why, with our guests Connie Conrad and Chan Pernsteiner. Connie Conrad is the Executive Director of Habitat for Humanity of WASA. She joined the organization last fall. She has a bachelor's degree in business management from Upper Iowa University. Connie has enjoyed a career in business development and nonprofit management in our region and promotes collaboration at every opportunity. Connie, welcome to Route 51.
Good morning, Rick. Thank you for having us.
Chad Pernsteiner is a technology education instructor at DC Everett Senior High School. Chad teaches the construction class that builds new habitat homes for families in the WASA area. Chad, welcome to Route 51.
Thank you.
Later in the program, we'll hear from Kale Herr, a habitat homeowner who will share his experiences and how his family has been impacted through the Habitat program, both as a homeowner and a volunteer. Have you been impacted by Habitat for Humanity? Perhaps you're a volunteer business partner. Perhaps you're a volunteer worker, habitat homeowner, or you have a question about how all of it works. Call us at 800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. Or send us an email at route51@wpr.org. Connie, please give us a snapshot of Habitat for Humanity's history and how you became involved.
Well, Rick, Habitat has a rich history in our country since about 1976. Habitat has a significant impact. Let me just give you some statistics to share. We have helped more than 13.2 million people obtain safe and secure housing. Just in 2017, Habitat directly helped 3.5 million people, and an additional 2.6 million people now have the opportunity to improve their housing. We have 2.1 million volunteers working throughout our organization doing various tasks. And right now in the United States, there's 1,500 local affiliates, 37 of which are located in Wisconsin, 550 international affiliates. And we're building homes in over 3,000 communities. So we're really delighted with that impact, not only locally, but throughout our country and globally.
So you said we have 37 affiliates in Wisconsin.
Yes.
About how many are here in north central Wisconsin?
Well, they're distributed more concentrated where the population is, matches the population. So in north central Wisconsin, I would say roughly one-third of those are located in our region.
Okay. Chad, you're a teacher and a Habitat volunteer. How did you become involved in the program, and how did DC Everest become involved?
This was way back when, I guess, when we first started it. I think it came about because actually the late Marv Schutte was very interested in getting more young people involved in construction. He seen the need that they needed more workers, and a lot of people did. So he got together, and I believe it was with our superintendent, Christine Gilmore, and They came up with a plan where actually the first 5 years he donated all the materials that came to the school. And then at that time there was three schools.
And how has it the program itself impacted your students?
This program impacts our students probably more than any other at the school. I always tell them, you know, this isn't just a class. You don't do a project and then, you know, it goes home on the refrigerator or it gets thrown away or whatever. You know, this is you're building somebody's home. So, you know, when they're working to do things correctly and if it's not right, you know, we fix it. And actually, one of the things that makes them open their eyes the most is when I tell them, hey, someday you're going to be able to drive your kids past this and go, I built that in high school.
That's
a very unique classroom project.
That would be an impact just on its own. That's pretty incredible. We'll get into the actual process with your students in just a bit, but I did want to ask you, how has this program at the school, as well as the volunteer hours that you put in, influenced your life?
Well, obviously, it's a portion of my job at school. There's lots and lots of students that are wanting to be involved in it, you know, take the class. It actually helps at school because the kids know they have to do things correctly in the beginning classes to get themselves into this class because we take them off-site many times. And, you know, the whole thing of them proving themselves so that they're trustworthy and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, even I bring my kids to the dedications and stuff. So there's a lot that is involved as far as, you know, my life, I guess.
Mm-hmm. And we'll get into that in just a little bit as well. And Connie, I'd like you to walk us through the process of how a family is chosen to become a Habitat homeowner and what responsibilities rest on them through the process.
Well, Rick, it is a very long process for our families to become familiar with the program, to apply and be qualified for the program. And that's an intentional long process because what we want to do is we want to assure that families of true need receive this this new home and that the families understand what it is to become a homeowner. Let me just clarify something that perhaps is confusing. Habitat families purchase their homes. We offer a nonprofit mortgage program for low-income families in our community, and that product is unique because it greatly reduces the payments that they have to pay for their home. It almost is on par with what they're paying for in rent. So that nonprofit mortgage allows them to qualify for a loan that they normally could not compete for in a conventional mortgage package. The homeowner applicants must pass a very stringent assessment of their income and debt ratios, verification of employment. We do criminal background checks. We also verify that current living conditions are substandard, and let me define that as issues of significant mold, perhaps non-functioning plumbing, non-functioning heat systems, or even overcrowding. So we do verify that their current situation is desperate. A unique program requirement of Habitat is also the commitment to invest over 300 hours of sweat equity. And that means work on their home, the other partner home, and other charitable nonprofit organizations in our community. And while that 300 hours may not sound like much in casual conversation, when we put it in the context of a family who is perhaps working multiple jobs, raising their family, caring for extended family, adding that 300 hours to their work week or their work month is really a challenge. So they work very hard to become qualified recipients of the home program. And one last requirement is that Habitat homes must be owner-occupied. So through the term of the mortgage, they must occupy that home. They can't receive the home and then rent it out to someone else. So very narrow requirements. Out of all the applicants, we usually settle down to about three or four each year, and two of which receive the homes.
So you mentioned the 300 hours of sweat equity. That's the minimum. Do you have families gotten together to do more than 300 hours.
In some instances, depending upon the family unit, because some members of the family can also contribute to that, of the immediate family, for example, and depending upon their other schedules, the time of year, a portion of the approximately one half of those hours need to be completed in other homes, our store, other nonprofits, but and the other half needs to be completed right on their home site. So depending upon weather and availability, skill sets, et cetera, they have some flexibility and some latitude as far as how they accomplish that. And yes, in many cases, they enthusiastically contribute even more.
Mm-hmm. And both of you, please comment on this. As the homeowners are working on their homes, what's it like for you to see that, to work alongside them, in your case, perhaps, Chad, and other volunteers working on their homes? What's it like to have them working alongside you?
For us at the school, it's, I guess, a little bit different, being that we build it at the school and then move it to the site. They are not at the school because we have a, you know, structured school day that we fit this into. It's a two-hour class, and there is sometimes then they, you know, we do get to see them at the site, but not a whole lot. But most of my guys do come to the dedication, and they do comment on how nice it is to see the family that's receiving it and to see how it affects them.
Mm-hmm. Connie, have you seen on the process at the job?
Yes, in my short time, in the 1 year with the organization, I did have the opportunity to witness this past construction season and our families, and I am so impressed by the way in which they approach this project. Some of these things that they're asked to do, they have not done before. They're not familiar with construction, but they are ready learners, and they enthusiastically approach anything we ask them. They want to do well. They want to do as much as possible. They appreciate us, you know, guiding them as far as how things should be done, and they get the whole family involved. They don't take this opportunity for granted at all, and it shows. And in that process, we really get to know them and they get to know us. And the trust account really builds throughout the year. And that's one of those intangible byproducts of this that is really awesome.
Chad, the Habitat construction program really is a collaboration with Habitat itself and two area schools, DC Everest and as well as Mosinee. Walk us through the process from beginning to job site.
I guess, like I said, it's a two-hour class, meets full year. At the beginning of the year, we have basically a shed with some piers and some beams on it, and we go through some safety stuff with the kids first, that first week, and then we start building. I always tell them they can't go for Thanksgiving break unless the roof's done. we start, you know, with the floor. We frame up the whole floor system, which takes a little bit longer because being that this is moved, there's wheel wells and things like that even incorporated into the floor system. And it's built in halves, so I always tell the students it's like building two homes really, really close to each other. And, you know, we build the floor system, then we sheet it, and then frame up the walls and sheet them, and then set the trusses, sheet the roof, and then, you know, get the roofing done and put the house wrap on, doors, windows, and then we go inside, like right now, and we just had all the rough heating is done, the rough plumbing is done, so the tubs are set into the wall where they will be, and the plumbing that's in the walls is all done, and right now we're I think tomorrow, the electrician will be there for the rough electrical. Once he gets done, because he has to do the final connections, a licensed electrician does, my students get to help him. He puts them to work, which is good. And then after that, we have to get our inspections done first. So the building inspector has to be called. He'll come and do all the inspections on all those things. Then after that, we'll start insulating, get the whole thing insulated, get another inspection, And then we drywall it. We do all the hanging of the rock. We do all of the mudding and taping of the joints, and then we spray texture too. And then, well, when we do get to that point, I always tell the students, I put them in their own rooms. They're in charge of their room at that point. So from there till the end, you know, the hanging of the rock, the taping, the mudding, the texture, the painting, the doors, the trim, all that stuff goes in. The kitchen cabinets are in, countertops are on. The only thing that we don't do interior is the flooring. And there's actually a seam down the middle that doesn't get the doors don't get finished there. But everything else in the house, as I always tell the students, it's ready for pictures.
So the students are actually, they're getting on-the-job training, literally.
Yeah. Yes.
Do you see a number of the students that you're working with on these projects go on into the construction field?
Absolutely. I would say lately, I would say it's around pushing that 50%. And a lot of the other ones are even going into construction management, things like that, even going to college for, you know, some sort of construction.
So you can credit the Habitat for making this available.
Absolutely.
To the school district, to the students. And Connie, at the same time, you crediting the students for getting this project ready for the families that are going to be living in the home.
Oh, absolutely.
That's incredible.
This collaboration between the school districts and our organization, it's a win-win situation. I mean, these students are learning skills that many employers would be hungry for employees to have, you know, group dynamics, team involvement, decision-making, all of those types of things that really make a great employee. You know, Chad's team is doing that and prepping those students for success, whatever career they pursue.
Now, to reiterate the fact that the homeowners themselves, the home is not free to them. They need to go through this program to qualify to become a recipient of the home, yet they still maintain a mortgage on the home at the low interest rates.
Yes.
How do you what lending institutions or how do you work with these lending institutions to make that available?
That required a unique solution in the context that, you know, most commercial lenders, while they have ambition to be involved with Habitat and support in that way, bank regulations don't allow them to be involved with our demographic. And the low-income family is not something that they can process through their typical conventional loans. So while they would like to be part of that, we had to, meaning Habitat International, had to develop a resource to create a financial partner and resource that could do these unique loans. This nonprofit mortgage is a very unusual product, so it is just for Habitat. We use one organization that Habitat resourced for us. It's not local, but it is one that takes all of this unique customer need, because these families are not typically they have paperwork requirements, and there's a lot of things that they're not used to doing. So they have a different process by which they're very tolerant of the families getting their information in. But bottom line is they still have to prove their credit worthiness. And indeed, these homes are not given away in any fashion. These families definitely earn them. They pay a down payment. Mm-hmm. They pay their property taxes and insurance, just like you and I had to.
And Chad, I know you need to get leave shortly to get to class, actually, in a few minutes. Where do the materials come from to the program?
Most of the materials that we get, I call up Builders First Source, who we have a partnership with, and basically Habitat has to pick up that bill. And I know, you know, they get some of their money from donations, the RBM store, things like that, to pay for those materials. But the majority comes from there. I mean, we have other ones like ABC does all the metal, like the soffit fascia, all that kind of stuff. But most of it comes through Builders First Source.
Okay. Before you leave, is there anything else that you'd like to add about your experience or the students, or what really something that stands out or strikes a chord with you with Habitat for Humanity?
I guess the number one thing would be just, you know, saying thank you to Habitat just to make this available to all these students because, you know, I get to see what it does for the students. I get to see or talk to them. There's lots of times where, you know, at the end of the year, I talk to them, ask them questions and stuff, and there's been a lot of years where students have said, this class taught me more than all my other 12 years of school, you know, and that's a pretty strong statement, and I've heard it multiple years in a row.
Yeah.
So, you know, without that, I don't think that we would have a program like this for the school to be able to outlay that kind of money for the materials. So it's a great partnership, and I hope it continues for a long time.
Great. Thanks for joining us this morning, Chad. I appreciate it very much.
Thank you.
And give our best to your class today. You're listening to a Habitat for Humanity of Wausau conversation with Connie Conrad, who is the executive director and educator and Habitat volunteer, Chad Pertzsiner, on Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Rick Ryer. When we return, we'll hear from a Habitat homeowner and volunteer on how his family's experience has impacted his life. There's room for your questions as well. Join us by calling 800-780-9742. Again, that's 1-800-780-9742, or send us an email at route51@wpr.org. This is Route 51 on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
You can always come home wherever life's road. Never be alone. In your heart, there's still a place, no matter how right or wrong you've gone. You can always come home.
I need someone to comfort me. Homeward bound. I wish I was.
We are talking with Connie Conrad from Habitat for Humanity of Wausau on Route 51. I'm Rick Ryer in for Glenn Moberg today. You can join the conversation at 800-780-9742. Again, that phone number is 1-800-780-9742. I had the opportunity earlier this week to talk with K.O. Herr, a Wausau man who, with his family, became Habitat homeowners in 2017. Here's his story. K.O. Herr, thank you for joining us today on the program. Please tell me the story of building your home.
Oh, it was an exciting moment when I heard that we were able to qualify and get a Habitat home. Everyone was so happy. My kids, my wife, everyone was so excited. You know, being on the program for numerous years, and I know how the program works, and I know how the home will benefit the family, and we were just so blessed to have the home.
Mm-hmm. When did you get your home?
Are you talking about actually living?
When did you move in, yes.
Okay. 2017.
Okay.
Last year.
Last year, so it was pretty recent yet. What was it like for you going through that front door for the first time in your new home?
It was just feeling, you know, you feel like you win something, you know. Yeah. I know that, you know, with the income that we have, I know that we are not going to be able to afford a conventional home. So we are so blessed to have this opportunity. And, you know, you just have that ownership feeling of owning something that it belongs to you, and which is a home that you can raise your kids, your family. And it's a great place.
So, K.O., it's been a year since you've been in your home, 2017. What's mm-hmm. it like now?
Everyone's still very, very shocked. You know, everyone feels like it just happened yesterday. That feeling, that excitement, mm-hmm. Still there. All my kids are very, you know, pleased to have the home, and I'm so happy to be able to, you know, own a home for my family, and everyone's so happy. And you know, over the summer, I was able to built a lot of stuff, built shelf in the garage, in the basement, and also put up a shed and also a patio too. So it's just something that you have that ownership, that you want to do something for yourself and for your family.
Feels pretty good.
Yeah.
It does.
It's in good feelings.
When the home was being built, before you moved in, what type of work did you and your family participate in to help it complete, to construct the project? What did you do?
Well, there were 300 hours that you mm-hmm. had to put into this. And half of it you can do for any nonprofit organization within the community. And also Habitat have a warehouse that they sell housing materials. And you can go over there and volunteer your time there, mm-hmm. Which is called sweat equity hours. Mm-hmm. And then half you can spend helping building your home. So I pretty much, because I work during the day, I pretty much take my vacation time and help build the home, me and my wife. And we are able to help build the home, doing the siding, putting, painting or, you know, something like that. And also put some nail on the wall or on a stud or something like that. It's pretty neat. And I learn a lot. And I know that, you know, some of these you can use to maintain your home when there's a damage to the home that it needs to be repaired. Mm-hmm. And I feel that I gained a lot of experience through this too.
So the project manager that was managing the building of your house, he taught you and his crew taught you how to do the studs and to do the siding and all of that, and you learned as you went, basically.
Yes. Yeah, those, oh my gosh, I cannot say enough about those guys. They are so nice. If you don't know anything, you can go and ask. They will show you how to do it. And they are just, you know, putting their heart out and helping the community, using their time without paying anything. You know, have to have no money to pay anyone. Mostly it's volunteering. So, So I'm so happy to be able to learn a lot, you know, through the building process. And I know that I can use some of the experiences that I gained from that to maintain the home.
You volunteer as well for Habitat, is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
When did you start volunteering for Habitat?
That will be around 2003. Mm-hmm. I worked for Head Start.
Okay.
And a lot of family during that time, and during the time that I worked with a lot of family, they need a home or housing, some type of shelter for their family. So, and we learned that Habitat is building some home that can help people own a home and, you know, be able to have enough room for their family. So, my profession that I work for, Head Start, my director, my supervisor were able to allow me to spend some of my time going to that program and learn from that so that I can assist the family that I work with. And since then, I just become part of the family selection committee, and mm-hmm. I usually go help a lot of family with translation. Mostly interpreting during that time.
Why did you decide that you wanted to volunteer?
I feel that this is a neat program. Habitat just help a lot of family be able to afford a home.
What does Habitat for Humanity mean to you?
Without Habitat, I will not be a homeowner. So that's how I see Habitat is so benefit to a lot of family in the community.
What does it mean to you and to your kids, your family, to be homeowners?
It means a lot. It just means like a savior. I would say that saved my family, because we have been living in apartments, and my kids do not have enough room for themselves. And now, you know, we are in a bigger space. We have a lot of storage room in the basement, pretty much a full basement for us to be able to store a lot of items that we need to store. And the kids, you know, they have their own room. So we feel like it's a saver for us, you know.
Obviously, you have that sense of pride of home ownership. Mm-hmm. Do your kids have that same sense of pride? Do you see that in them on a daily basis, or do they hold themselves up higher because now they have their own place?
Definitely, I see them have that confidence, you know, inviting their friends over. Before that, you know, they don't feel like they have a good space, enough space for their friend to come over. Or, you know, kids, sometimes they feel embarrassed too, you know, if they don't have, you know, enough space for them, for their friends to come over. Mm-hmm. And now, you know, we have that space and they were so happy. I'm going to invite my friends to come. So every time we have birthday, they are more than, you know, willing to invite their friends to come. So I'm pretty sure they have that, you know, that feeling, that confident feeling that, you know, now that you have a home, you do not feel embarrassed anymore, you know, inviting your friends over. That's how my kids keep talking to me.
How does that make you feel as a dad?
I feel like I did something good for my family. You know, as a dad, you are there to provide for your family, especially food and shelter are the two main sources. And having a home that, you know, my kids are happy, you know, they can play outside, they can be happy. It's just a good feeling as a dad or as a parent.
It's K.O. Herr from WASA. Connie Conrad, K.O. says that Habitat for Humanity is life-saving. This really gets to the why of your organization. Most mm-hmm. people see the tangible. You know, we see the house. We mm-hmm. see the family going into the house. But there are many benefits of this program that we don't necessarily see. Tell us about the long-term impacts of the program on families and communities as a whole.
Well, Rick, that's a great question, because when I arrived at Habitat, I also thought it was about homes and had something to do with a lot of good volunteers. And then I started to research Habitat and the real effect of families' health and well-being in homes that are owned. So when we think in the context of a child who is raised in a home that is owned versus a home that is rented, I would like to just share with our audience some sobering statistics that I discovered and really see playing out now that I'm involved and have met some of our families. Let me give you some examples. A child who grows up in a home that is owned is 59% more likely to become a homeowner themselves in 10 years. They're 40% less likely to become involved in a teen pregnancy, 50% less likely to be in a single-parent household, 50% less likely to be on welfare by age 20. Rick, if a child is on welfare by age 20, how do they ever learn to get off? How do they ever develop the skills to become independent and empowered? When we see children grow up in a home that is owned, they are 25% more likely to vote and become involved in their communities and see themselves as leaders. So it has really little to do with homes. It has to do with the next generation's welfare and our next generation of workforce and the health of our community, both mental, physical, economic. It has a huge impact. And I was surprised to learn these statistics in my short time with Habitat. But that's really what we need people to understand, is it's not about homes. It's about how do we change the cycle of poverty and how do we make our community healthy.
So literally, quite literally, you're building communities and hope.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
That's quite incredible. In addition to home construction, in addition to building communities and building hope in our communities, Habitat, many affiliates operate recycled building material stores, or called RBMs. Mm-hmm. Explain the purpose of those facilities as it relates to the community, as it relates to volunteers and so on.
Well, Rick, the each Habitat affiliate has its own combination of services that it provides. And so in the Wausau footprint, our affiliate is not only a home building program, but it is also the recycled building materials store. And that is a resource for our community to shed gently used or new excess products in the home construction areas. And those products are donated to our store. A team of volunteers, frankly, an awesome team of volunteers, works very hard every week to clean up those items, to negate them, perhaps pulling nails out of trim, and to get those items ready for sale. In our footprint, because of the size we are, we currently operate the store one day a week. It's on Saturday from 9 to 1, and our volunteers open that store, they manage that store, they run that store, and we sell those new or gently used building material products. And there is something for everyone, I will tell you. The variety of products that we receive, the generous volume we receive, and the range of products from antique things to brand new tools and equipment to excess siding, I mean, you name it, we've seen it all. All of those products come in. They're offered for sale to all the public can come. And what it is it's a couple of things. It's keeping those items out of the landfill because people are not disposing of the excess items. They're donating to us. It's letting the community have a resource to perhaps build that deer hunting blind or put that bathroom in the cottage or whatever at a significant discount compared to going retail and buying new. And it's also the idea that the community has a way to support Habitat, and that's a really good feeling. Because not everyone can offer a typical donation of financial donation. And so this gives them a way to participate in our mission in a different way, keep product out of the landfill, complete that project that they've wanted, be creative and repurpose things. It's a win-win for everybody.
You mentioned diverting from landfills.
Mm-hmm.
Explain the impact of that. You know, do you have an example of what that impact has been for the Wausau affiliate?
Yes, we do, and we're really kind of proud of this number. We have many volunteers working at the recycled building materials store taking in donations 2 days a week. And most of the donations are, like I say, cleaned up or negated and then put out for sale. But occasionally something comes in and it perhaps has a piece that's broken or there's a part that we cannot put out for sale. So then what we do is we recycle that. And just to give you an example of the significance of that, just in our scrap metal recycling, in 2017, our team was able to divert 15 tons of scrap metal from our area landfill. And that's just in the metal products. There is someday I'd like to share with you a number about all of the dressers and desks and lumber and windows and doors and everything else that goes out our customer sale door that also does not go to the landfill. And that's really important because, as you can imagine, you know, recycling and keeping our environment safe and clean is really important to this generation as well as next. We just currently launched our holiday light collection effort, where folks donate their used holiday lights, string lights, if you will, and they drop those off at area locations or at our store. And that, too, all adds to that initiative to recycle things, keep them out of the landfill, and it provides a small revenue stream for the Habitat mission.
We're talking with Habitat for Humanity of Wausau's Executive Director, Connie Conrad, on Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Rick Ryer. When we return, we'll talk about partnerships, other Habitat affiliates in the region, and what's ahead for Habitat in 2019? This is Route 51 on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We'll be right back. Habitat for Humanity is our topic this week on Route 51. We're talking with Connie Conrad from Habitat for Humanity of Wausau. In our remaining time, Connie, tell us a bit about the partnerships your organization has developed over the years. In other words, who's swinging the hammers alongside you?
Oh, Rick, we'll need a lot more time. There's a lot to say. Habitat is a center of collaboration. We have members of our community, certainly, who donate products and they volunteer for us, and that's really the hub of how we do everything. We have some specific corporations and contractors who are very supportive of our organization through discounted products, discounted labor, things like that. And there is a benefit to them because they're able to take those donated products and take the charitable tax write-off, perhaps utilize valuable warehouse space for new product inventory. And, you know, so all of that combination of it's a win for Habitat, it's also a win for our sponsoring organizations. But, you know, there's so many unique collaborations. When I think about the municipalities in our area who we work very closely with to identify vacant lots in each municipality and identify that as an opportunity for future Habitat build, certainly the municipality is ambitious to get that property back onto the tax rolls. We are anxious to get our family homes into established neighborhoods so that they can become part of the neighborhood fabric, have neighbors to rely on and enjoy, and that's really an important exchange. So all of these collaborations really combine to do more than if we did things singularly. So collaboration is what it's all about.
And you also collaborate with some of the other affiliates in this region and in the state with projects for Habitat in Wisconsin. Talk a little bit about that.
Yes, Habitat, being a Christian-based organization, we have a function that's called Tithe. And what that means is that we support not only our state effort to build housing throughout the state, but a portion of our tithe also goes international so that when someone contributes to Habitat locally, a portion of those funds go to an international effort so that you're building a home locally as well as a home in a foreign country that needs support. Those construction costs are a little bit reduced, so the money goes even further. But that's our responsibility, is to not only take care of locally, but to also make sure that Habitat's able to function throughout the world.
What is the Habitat Affiliate Covenant? Explain that.
The covenant is an agreement between our local Habitat affiliate and both the state organization and the international organization. And while we have some flexibility locally to be a combination of building or repair or stores, and you know each one's a little bit different style, we also have a covenant, which is an agreement that says that we will conduct ourselves in certain ways, that we are Christian-based, we are all-inclusive, that we will work together to promote each other. An example, if I received a phone call from a northern Wisconsin cottage owner and they said, golly, I'd like to donate this product to Habitat, I would say, well, your closest Habitat is in this community or that community. So what we try to do is get the donation to the best possible entity and then make sure that we are sharing amongst each other rather than just trying to get everything to our organization, non-competitive environment, if you will.
Mm-hmm. And Habitat also has a mobile response unit to address disasters in the world.
Yeah, because Habitat's main focus is decent, safe housing. It is not limited to new construction only. Some Habitats do repair and rehab of homes in their community, but when we are talking about a natural disaster, Habitat has the compassion to be able to say, let's roll right away and get out to those areas where people need shelter. And so they have a mobile response unit, which is a series of vans stocked with tools and supplies. They have resources for volunteers in each area, and they respond with to disasters, cleanup, and they begin rebuilding right away.
And some of the other programs that many people aren't aware of, like aging in place and mm-hmm. Brush with Kindness, talk a little bit about those and how those wrap within and weave in the mission of Habitat for Humanity.
Well, that's a great question because in the Habitat Wausau affiliate, we are a build affiliate and we also operate the recycled building materials store. But what we aren't is a remodeling or rehab unit. And so if we have someone call and they say, well, golly, I've got some new roofing material, but I don't have anyone to install it, or I have a hole in my roof, that's something that in our footprint yet, in this size currently, we are not able to respond to. So what we do is we reach out to these other entities, Brush with Kindness, Helping Hands, things like that, to be able to get that need to a resource that can support it. And so there again, non-competitive, non-profit collaboration, that's where we're all heading. And that's really just trying to serve any need that comes in our door, that we get it to the place and take care of that person.
What's ahead and what are you looking forward to in 2019?
I'm looking forward to all of it. Oh, my goodness. We have so many awesome people that help us accomplish this really important mission. That is so exciting. We have the nicest people in the world serving the organization with such sincerity and enthusiasm. It's a delight to be there. But when you ask about what we're looking forward to or expecting, one of the things is the challenge is that funding from typical resources in the past has in some cases dried up or gone away. We used to receive grants for some of our larger purchases like land lots and such. So we are challenged, as many nonprofits, to find new sources of revenue, and we keep doing that. People are very generous with planned giving, estate gifts, product donations, you know, employee giving campaigns. So those are all really needed and replacing funding that used to be there. We are certainly excited to expand our volunteer program. The statement, more the merrier, is so true, and everyone brings a unique skill set from their experience, and that all helps us do more and do it better. We would love to have more applicants to our program to apply for the home ownership program that begins probably late January or February. So you're welcome to watch our Facebook page or our website to see how to apply for that program start. And then bottom line is we want to expand awareness so that we can reduce substandard housing in our community. You know, I don't think I need to ask or point it out that poverty is right here. It's right next door to us. It's that house that we tend to not want to drive past or that street we don't turn down. So please don't be naive and just realize poverty is right here and you can make a difference.
And what's the best way for people to find out more about Habitat for Humanity in Wausau or Habitat for Humanity throughout the region?
Well, certainly the internet is a good tool, and Habitat's just building a new website. So information there, information on Habitat International is certainly available. And you're always welcome to just give us a call or stop on in and volunteer for a few hours and see how you like it.
And that's all the time we have for today on Route 51. I'd like to thank our guests, Connie Conrad from Habitat for Humanity of Wausau, Chad Pernsteiner from D.C. Everest Senior High School, and K.O. Herr of Wausau. Thanks to Joy Ratch-Kramer for producing today's program and for on-air production. John Altenberg composed the Route 51 theme, and special music today from Dan Kroll, Anil Jackson, Simon and Garfunkel, Daughtry, Madness, and Anna Wilson. I'm Rick Ryer in for Glenn Moberg. Next week, we turn to immigration. Until then, we're heading out of town.
Brick by brick, stone by stone, we built a place to call our own. Gonna fill it up with laughter, ride my happiness.